Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
So some would want to target their anger at church leadership, like Boy K. Packer, Thomas S. Monson, or whoever. But the truth is, they've inherited a doctrine and a theology that was not of their own making, largely. So I guess we could blame them for Proposition 8 or the stance or the lack of welcome in the church towards our gay brothers and sisters. But really, it's got to kind of come down to God. And if we're believers of modern day revelation, it seems like if there was ever a time for one, it would be on this issue. But it's not here. Do you ever have feelings or prayers in that respect? I imagine you would. It seems like if God could speak to his prophets to fix this, he could. He would. So it must be his doing.
I believe he could. My hubris is, well, God's a rational fellow like me. He certainly would do what I want to do. He would certainly institute the policies that I'm in favor of. He wouldn't be God if he were otherwise. Well, it seems to me on a whole lot of issues, where we inquire of God, what is thy will? And we would like deity to tell us what to do. The answers that we get are, my son, it's a hard issue, isn't it? I want you to know I'm with you. Go do the best you can. Try your best to base your behavior and your actions and your decisions on right principles. How many times have I heard well-meaning young people at BYU engage in a conversation with Heavenly Father, something like this? Well, God, I'm back from my mission, and I want to do your will, so please tell me which major to choose. And there's these three women. There's Sue and Sarah and Selma. Which one do you want me to marry? God, just tell me, and I'll marry her and go in the major you tell me to do. I'll enroll in the major you want, and I'll get my degree and get a Harvard MBA and end up with three boats and an extra house and hence on to the celestial kingdom. Now, I am being sarcastic. And God says, John, you're going to have to marry that woman and live with her and be a good husband. I'm not going to tell you who to marry. It's not my decision. It's your decision. You do the best you can. I'm behind you. I'll try to help you. I'm not going to tell you what to major in. God doesn't have a list of majors on his kitchen refrigerator. This one's the best one. Business and prominence in the Republican Party. That's not necessarily first on my list of majors, John. Well, uh, I'm being too lighthearted about it. I don't deny that God seems to have, with respect to certain things, said this is what you need to do. With a whole lot of other things, I don't believe we know. I think God has kept to himself a whole lot more than he's told us about certain issues. And he may know when every sparrow falls, but he may not prevent every sparrow from falling. And I believe he cares. But I don't think he relieves us of the responsibility to try to figure it out for ourselves. And sometimes the impatience is about more than you can stand. And in my case, that's my problem, not God's problem.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple easy, well, not easy. I'm going to ask you a couple simple questions and then a compound question. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. As a scientist, how do you reconcile DNA evidence with the Book of Mormon?
I don't think it's a solvable problem. I don't think that the historical evidence from the Book of Mormon permits us an unequivocal model upon which to compare the DNA evidence. I don't think that there is a straightforward population genetics explanation that would lead to a clear-cut prediction. I think sometimes we say we know more than we do about the specifics and the precision of the historical geography and historical family relationships. I don't think that there is DNA evidence. I don't think that the DNA evidence that we have invalidates the story of the Book of Mormon. I've read some of the arguments, the population genetics arguments. I'm not smart enough to understand them all very well. But people whom I trust most who do understand them tell me that you can't solve the problem with this kind of evidence. I accept that.
Have you considered, just in terms of probability, the DNA evidence plus the archaeological evidence plus the linguistic evidence plus the anachronisms? I imagine you've studied what critics would use to undermine the Book of Mormon. If someone was inclined to sort of just apply Occam's razor and say that you can try and explain what a horse was or wasn't, what steel was or wasn't, what a Lamanite was or wasn't, and you have to create some pretty contorted explanations. Or you could sort of just look where the evidence points, take the simplest explanation and conclude that it's a fictional book. Have you ever gotten to a point where you've considered that?
Yes. But my freshman experience on my upper decker bed trumps that for me. And also accompanied by my sense of uncertainty about Joseph's role in the production of the book. Dick Bushman has written a very thoughtful piece on Joseph Smith as a translator. And one of the problems of historical inquiry in and outside of a Mormon context is using modern day understanding of words and concepts and projecting it on people in the past and assuming that they meant the same thing as we do in certain uses of language. A translator is somebody who knows two languages and looks at one language and renders it in the language in another one. So in this model, Joseph is turning the plates over, looking at the characters, peering through them in the Urim and Thummim, and getting a divine reassurance that that character means this. Well, Joseph's mother said that sometimes Joseph would be translating and be looking into his hat. And his sense of translator may not be the simple-minded sort of vision that we have when we use the word translation or translator uncritically. I don't know how to say any more about it than that, except I'm willing to accept some or part of the Book of Mormon as being achieved through the inspiration, through the mediation of Joseph, through a mechanism something more complex than rendering a pictograph in one language into an English word.
So inspired, not necessarily a translation in the technical sense of the word.
If it turns out to be true, I won't be surprised by that. If it turns out to be something I haven't even thought about and nobody else has, I'll just say, oh, another surprise that that was not unexpected.
I imagine your perspective on the Book of Abraham would be similar.
Yes.
So here's the longer question. I've tried to put my secular hat on at times to kind of try and figure out how religion might come to be if there isn't some literal involved celestial influence. And as I put that secular hat on, here's what I've been able to piece together. That man has to deal with uncertainty and tragedy. That man has this self-consciousness that causes him to reflect upon the implications of death and the afterlife. And a lack of religious or theological model to help fill those holes often leads man to a very desperate, sad, lonely, and nihilistic state. And so occasionally a charismatic genius comes along and says, I'll do mankind a favor and I'll come up with explanations for those theological holes and those existential holes. I'll create a story, and I'll use the fact that man experiences emotions, and I'll pair those emotions with that story. And by just basic classical conditioning, teach that man to associate those emotions that they feel with this narrative that I've been able to weave, and maybe even with the best of intentions, rescue man from that sense of existential nihilistic despair and provide him a sense of identity, a sense of hope, a sense of rules, a community, and all sorts of explanations for the afterlife. And so, yes, we're raised and we're given a narrative. And like all humans experience emotions, we experience emotions within the context of that narrative, as do other people in other religions, as do people who don't believe in religions at all. And thus our testimony or conviction towards that religion is born out of the pairing of that emotional experience with that narrative. And that's religion. And that's what makes your certainty, and that's what makes the certainty of those men who flew that plane into those planes into the Twin Towers. And I don't offer this scenario with joy or glee or satisfaction. I hold my experience in the church with much reverence and affection and esteem and joy and elation. But there's this generation now that's dealing with two things. One is they're finding that the narrative that they actually experienced that emotional experience with is quite inaccurate, as all narratives are. And they're finding that the actual historical record or narrative that seems to be more based on fact is vastly different from the one on which, upon which their testimony was forged. And then they're seeing how many wonderful people are of different faiths that are no faith at all. And they're contemplating the minuscule percentage of the world's population that happens to be born into the one true church. And they're asking, how can this be? That this is God's one and only true church with exclusive authority, that all other religious ordinances are illegitimate in God's eyes, and that our leaders conveniently have some of the most important revelations that they could have on social issues, always 20 or 30 years after the time that they should. And I don't say all this to depress you. I come to you partly wanting to seek the wisest people I know to help me and many of my friends find a way to make sense of all this. And because I don't want to see the church fall into disrepair. I don't want to see people flooding away and going to who knows what sometimes. But sometimes I get beaten down, as maybe you have, from the disappointments of some of my experiences in the church. And I guess there's just this whole generation of people, of youth, in my generation, who are trying desperately to grasp at whatever straws they can to find a reason to stick around. And so now you have a few minutes to solve that problem for us.
Okay. I believe I have considered every one of the things you said. I don't think I can refute any of them. I don't think I can construct an argument make a plea based in evidence. That negates the possibilities that you suggested. I just decided I'm not going to go there for myself. Mostly because I can't, for reasons I don't know that I can explain to you. I'm much more willing for people to be imperfect and unexplainable than I used to be.
Meaning church leaders?
In church leaders or anybody, mostly myself. I was in Hong Kong when President Monson was visiting, and we got word that his mother passed away. I took him to the airport when he needed to get home. I sat on the bed all night long with Marion G. Romney when he got a phone call in the mission home in Hong Kong that Richard L. Evans had passed away and he had to get home for the funeral. Somewhere in the middle of that night, he turned to me and says, "What do you do?" I said, "I teach at BYU." "What do you teach?" "Biology." "Do you believe in evolution?" See, he threw that one at me long before you did, John. These are good men. I'm sure that Elder Romney and I disagreed on matters of science. But the issue was that before he left home and Elder Evans was stricken with a virus, the 12 had gone to the bedside and he'd been asked to be voice in the anointing and blessing. And he looked at me, I said I couldn't bless him to get better. So he was sort of expecting the phone call. Maybe my feelings of kinship to the goodness of these people in circumstances like that is a reflection of this psychological explanation that you just propounded. Maybe it is. I don't think so. I hope it isn't. In some ways, the church has been a lot better at reducing narrowness. There was a great piece in one of the early dialogues written by a recent convert to the church in Britain. He says, "Can't we reconsider the primary lesson based on the 4th of July? We British are a proud people and don't like to celebrate our defeats." Well, we've come a ways from that. That's one of the good things correlation did. And in other ways, we're more narrow somehow. I think it's a mistake for so much emphasis in the contemporary church on the world is an evil place. We have got to keep the good. We've got to look around us and find ways to confront and overcome the evil in the world. I'm not going to tell you there isn't evil in the world. But I don't want my granddaughter Kate and Patrick and Madeline and all of Ben's sons to go out into the world and feel that way. I want them to go out into the world and feel there's a whole lot of good people in the world, and I'll be able to join with them, and we'll be able to do something better. I think that positive approach is better than the hunker down and circle the wagons. That isn't directly related to your question, but it is sort of obliquely part of it. If I believe my Mormonism, then all of the people of the world are of equal worth in the sight of the beings who put us here, of whom we are progeny. The nicest things that happen to me are when I share love with people who think like I do and people who don't think like I do, and I choose that. I choose that over despair. I choose that over explanations that my religious sentiments are things of my own making. I could be wrong. I could die and that would be the end. But if that were the end of consciousness, I wouldn't know that I was wrong, would I? What I don't think is true, I think there's more to come, and so I muddle on. Forgive me for not being able to say anything more insightful than that.
I think that was plenty insightful.
Thank you for allowing me to talk to you. I remember you. I will always hold you as a good friend. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bradshaw.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton.
Nearer, my God, to me. Nearer.